Okay, my name is Joan Lively. I'm now a resident in Middle Sackville, but I did live in Bedford most of our married life. I lived here in 1954, 55, 56, long enough to go to Bedford Central School in grade 11 and meet a lot of people. Then I, especially to meet my husband, who was the guy next door, and I moved to Halifax, and then we started to go together, and we lived on Meadowbrook Drive all our married life. For all of our four children were born from Meadowbrook Drive. We lived with Gordon's parents for a little while, and my mother-in-law was Mrs. Clean, and at that time we used cloth diapers. And laundry day in her house was a very, very busy day. And we washed the diapers, we boiled the diapers, we rinsed the diapers. When I moved to Meadowbrook Drive, I certainly did not boil the diapers anymore, but I had the whitest diapers of anybody. I was very proud of those white diapers, and I would have to thank my mother-in-law for that start with the diapers, isn't that right? So, I guess maybe, my grade 11 in Central School was very interesting because I met a lot of people during that year in school, and I still stay in touch with some of the friends. I was lucky enough to be able to go to the reunion in 2007, I think, or 2009, I'm not sure which, and I was reacquainted with my best friend from there, you know, Maybe 2 years ago, through one of my grandsons who sells cars, somebody came in and said, "Oh, your name's Lively. Do you know anything about the Bedford Barons? When you know whatever?" No, but my grandmother would. So we got in touch with each other, and we had another little reunion of a lot of the Bedford people up in Bedford Place Mall, which was really quite nice, you know, because it could have been a whole lot more people, but you know, it's easy to catch the guys, but it's not always easy to catch the girls because they change their names. Mm. I think Quebec has a good idea where the girls keep their maiden names and whatever. So it was really nice to have that opportunity to meet a lot of those people. And so one girl in particular, her name is Carol. I guess I can use names, okay? Mm-hmm. I won't say last names, maybe in case she wouldn't like that. I'm not sure she would, but... we still stay in touch, and we see each other on a regular basis. You know, even though we separated for all those years, and I never met her husband, I never really met her children, and she never met mine, and so on. But now that we're both widows, we have lots of time to spend with each other now, right? My year at Central School and living in Millview, I lived at the time with my parents, we got to enjoy the theater that was in Bedford, and Dragnet was one of those movies with Jack Webb that was always a favorite of mine, and I remember through school we had to go and watch Romeo and Juliet, which was a long way from Dragnet, for sure, but it was necessary through the school, and that, but we lived in the area down where Moyer's Mill was in the chocolate factory, and at that time it was still in operation, so especially on damp still days the smell of chocolate was absolutely wonderful all through there, right? my late husband he lived right next door to the Moyer's chocolate factory, on his grandfather's property, and many times he would say that some of the men would come out through the side door and have a ball of warm chocolate in their hand and pass it through the fence to the kids. They probably could have lost their jobs for doing that, right? You know, but it was nothing that tasted nicer than this warm chocolate that was very fresh, right? My husband had an uncle after whom he was named, who was actually drowned in the mill pond beside the Moyer's chocolate factory. It's hard to imagine now because there's been so much infill in that area that the water came up almost would be close to where the lot in the store is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there was nothing there but water, and Gordon's uncle was 12 years old at the time, and he was a Boy Scout and a paper boy, and coming home from delivering his papers when his good friend James Wyatt called to him and said, "You have to come and help me. You have to come because my little brother Joey's fallen through the ice." And so, of course, being a Boy Scout, that would be naturally what he would do. And the two boys made the effort, and they got the young boy out, Joe, but they both drowned. And with his father working right in the mill, it must have been very difficult for him and for the other people who would know them all. In the Anglican Church in Bedford, there's a window dedicated to the memory of Gordon Lively and James Wyatt. So the story will never really be forgotten because of that, right? You know, but across the road from the chocolate factory, there was a big pipe that came down, led from the dam, which was a runoff of they made the dam for the water source for the chocolate factory, and there was a huge pipe, must have been 2 feet wide, with big iron wrap around it. But we used to walk that pipe to go to the dam to swim. Oh, it was wonderful. But probably one of the things I would never have told my mother was that after one of the movies, we all went up to swim at the dam, and I don't think she would have said it was okay to do that after dark. But it was it made for great memories of living in Bedford, and when we moved to Bedford, I was taking my grade 10 in QEH in Halifax, my worst year of school ever. I wasn't happy there at all. I think it's because I was so late maturing, I didn't fit in. But the volleyball team and the glee club is what kept me together, right? But we moved to Bedford partway through that term, at grade 10, and my father worked in the city, so I would go into work with him in the mornings, and he would give me a dollar on Mondays, and that would buy my bus tickets to get me home every day, right? But my father was very close with his money, and if you had to ask him, it was like a big sigh as he reached in his pocket, right? You know, so it was always, and Dad traveled a lot, so I was closer to my mother, let's say, because. And so one day I get in his car and there was a dollar on the seat, but he didn't say to me, "That's your money." And I didn't ask him if that was my money. And I got out of the car without it, went to school and said, "I wonder how I'm going to get home today." So I just thought, well, Dad took the same route all the time, so I thought that maybe the best thing would be just to follow, you know, the route that he would go down Oxford Street, down Bears Road, out the Bedford Highway. I walked until I got to Princess Lodge, which is quite a distance from QEH, and my father met me coming. He was coming in, didn't know where I was and whatever, right, you know, I didn't have any money. I wouldn't even have thought to call home. But by that time, I'm feeling pretty sorry for myself. He stopped. But I didn't think, you didn't tell me that was my money. I think back about it. How silly was that to get yourself in a position like that, right? You know, but but anyway, when we lived on Meadowbrook Drive, it was a dirt road at the time. And when my husband Gordon was probably 16, I think, his best friend lived on Meadowbrook, and it was called Mitchell's Hill at the time. And they were playing football in the field across, you know, across from where we actually built our home. And he had an injury from that and hurt his arm really bad. And his friend Francis had his bike there. So Gordon gets on the crossbar of his bike down over that dirt road to go to find a doctor. I mean, he ended up having a really bad break in his arm, but I'm sure his behind was more sore than his arm was from the crossbar of the bike, right? You know, but after we had our, you know, two children, we had four pregnancies pretty close to one another, and I didn't drive a car at that time, right? So I would put the two of them in the stroller or in the carriage, and I'm probably pregnant again at the same time, right? Down over the hill we go. I must have been desperate to want to get out to put them in a carriage and walk down a dirt road knowing I had to push that carriage back up the hill.
Oh, my.
You know, so our hill was dead in the winter and that until Metro Transit put a bus service that came in as Bedford Village built up and all mm-hmm. the top. And from then on, it was easy because the salt trucks took care of it, right? Because mm-hmm. they had to for the bus service and that, right? You know, so... So I guess it may be our most of our social life when we lived on Meadowbrook was through the fire department because my husband became a volunteer fireman. And it would be pretty chaotic when the alarm would go off in our house and he'd have to go and I would be holding his shirt while he's getting his pants on and trying to get his shoes on and trying to get out the door to get to the fire department, you know, to answer these calls. And I remember one night, always been so afraid of thunder and lightning and it was thunder and lightning and a call came in that house was on fire and I said, "You're not going to leave me when it's thunder and lightning and that's somebody's house is probably burning down." And I'm bringing the child out in myself, thinking of the thunder and lightning, right, you know, because it's always been such a fear for me that, you know, I used to say it was crowded in her closet because the dog wanted in there, and so did I. But I ended up playing, I play music, and I play electric bass and acoustic guitar, and play with the Bedford Fiddle Group out of the Lawn Bowling Center area in Bedford, and we were to play on the 1st of July on the Bedford waterfront. Excuse me. And so it had thundered a little bit that morning, and we had a dog, Molly, that we never tied because she just stayed in the yard all the time. But the thunder had stopped, and I thought, well, she'll be all right now because she's so nervous of it, like I am, mm-hmm. right? So off we went down to play music. Well, while we were down there, we were under a big tent and with power hookups for my bass and my amp and that, right, you know, and all of a sudden it started to thunder. And we're under the tent, and I'm terrified. I'm absolutely terrified. I unplug my amp, and I get it all together, but somebody else is there with their grandchildren who had some health issues, and these children didn't understand what thunder and lightning was, and they said, "I didn't want to not look brave around those children who didn't, because I should understand it, right? You know, and as soon as after we realized the fiddlers were fine, they didn't have to be plugged in, they were okay, right? You know, and so I waited until after the next flash of lightning and the thunder, and then I ran like crazy to get to my car, and when I got home, the dog was gone. She was gone because she was just so afraid. She was just looking for somebody to be with. And my granddaughter called me and she said, "Grammy, are you home?" "Yes, I am now." She said, "Well, somebody called from Tim Hortons and Molly's over there and these two ladies are keeping her there till you get there." So I went over. "Well, did they even buy you a donut?" I just keep thinking when I grow up, I'm not going to be afraid of thunder and lightning anymore. But I guess I'm never going. I guess I'm never going to leave because I can't get any more grown up. They say if you don't grow up by 50, you don't have to. But you know, but I think I'm way past that now, right? So I guess most of our social life revolved around the fire hall, mm-hmm. you know, monthly dances and activities and so on, right? You know, and I was part of the ladies' auxiliary. And so on. So there was a particular day when my father was ill and my sister was coming home from out west to be there, and I was doing too many things at once, and I was working, took the children off to school, went to work, I came home at lunch hour to get a start on supper because I was going to be doing a job helping cater at the fire hall that night, mm-hmm. and so anyway. And I came home from my job, picked up the children, went to the fire hall, and Gordon would be picking them up from there, right, you know, and this alarm went off. And I said, oh, come on, we can go and see. You can actually see the fire trucks leaving the fire hall. You've never been in this area, you know. Mm-hmm. And I get to the top of the steps and somebody says, it's your house. And I never gave it another thought to the fact that I had put some meat in a pot on the stove to partly cook. And then I could, you know, make supper later, you know, for whatever. And, you know, when we got home and realized that the neighbor had seen smoke coming out of the house and that, right? So it was a pretty terrifying thing when they say it's your house, you know, for all the calls that Gordon has gone on with the fire department and that, right? You know, the fire department was so necessary, but he would talk about some of the different calls that he would have to go on, right? You know, and one time when he went to, and there was a traffic accident up on the Bai High, I think, and by the time he got there, he was later than some of the rest of them, but when he got there, the car's upside down on the side, and the guys are kind of standing around, and it's like, why are you standing here? Are people in the car? Yes, sir. Well, why are you not doing anything about it? Well, because the car is upside down, and there are nuns in the car. And well, we didn't know what to do, because there are nuns in the car. Well, Gordon said, well, there's still people. You still have to get them out, but they're still just people. So if you see their legs, it's not going to matter. They just want to get out of the car, out of the car, right? You know. So it was. There were certainly some funny times, and there were busy times. And every Tuesday night was fire hall night. That he would be gone for fire hall, you know. And our wonderful dances every month that we would have, and you know, so good to meet so many people through the fire department. And he played hockey, so I used to go to all his hockey games too. And he played for the Bedford Barons, and that would have been when our children were young. And one of the members of another team had a bad injury, and it really scared me because I said, "So this is for fun. What happens if something happens to you?" And where does that put the children and I at that point, right? Mm-hmm. And so on. So I did everything I could to discourage him from playing in that hockey, because it would have been rough hockey, mm-hmm. too, right? You know. So then later on, he joined a gentleman's league where there wasn't supposed to be any rough stuff, no fighting and so on, right? You know. But after one of the games, he came home and he actually had a stitch in the corner of his eye. You know. And what happened? Well, a guy hit me. You know. Well, and he said, well, I hit the guy. I hit him. He said, well, I said, well, why did you hit him? He said, well, because he hit me first. And I said, and we're how old? How old are we? But I used to go to a lot of his hockey games, and it was always fun because, you know, they always had dances after, you know, sometimes on weekends and that too, right, you know, and I loved to dance, and music was always my life, and we both played music. You know, and we sold our house in 98 and lived in an apartment for a while. But after that, we just lived in our trailer first and then our motorhome in Nova Scotia. And we just traveled around and played music. Oh. And life was just so wonderful, right, you know, until cancer came calling and said, well, I'm going to take care of that for you, right, you know. So it changes your life around, because then you don't know who you are, you don't know where you belong, you don't know whatever. So that's when my son built rooms in his basement in Middle Sackville for me, and that's where I live.
Oh, great.
So it's my three grandchildren, and now I have five grandchildren, and I have two great-grandchildren, and, you know, and they all live close, you know, so I get to see them all, you know. I guess that my children would have started school at Bedford Central School. but we were Catholic, and they would go to the Catholic school. But because my son was not happy about having to start school, we made sure that we left our daughter in Central School until he got 1 year under his belt, and then they went over to St. Ignatius School. Mm-hmm. And then when the school closed down, it was really sad, because we all took piano lessons from Sister Teresa, which was wonderful. I remember that my son Claire came home one day. He had some ear problems, and I used to have to take him to the city twice a week to have his ears checked. One day when he was going in and he was telling me about one of his students, one of his friend's students, mother died. And he just, his comment, and probably some of the sister's training, I would have to say, that, you know, would make him make the statement, "I don't know why everybody's so sad, because look at the nice place she has to go." I say, comments like that can put lumps in your throat, right, you know, because you sort of say, like, wasn't that wonderful that they would teach them that, right, you know? But also, one of the sisters told my daughter that there was no Santa Claus. I wasn't impressed with that comment, so I just said to her, "Well, I guess if you don't believe, then there probably won't be any presents." So I think she continued to believe for a little while because it was rather important to do that, right? You know, but Gordon went to St. Ignatius School when he was younger, and when he was only little, his father taught him how to box. So his father would be on his knees, and they had the boxing gloves, and they would do this. And so he's in probably grade 7 or 8 in St. Ignatius School, and you know, how the kids can, you know, "Oh, yeah, you won't do that." He wanted us to have this boxing match between him and, because Gordon was tall, and this other guy was tall, too, is Jimmy. "I don't want to do that." No, because Gordon was really shy and quiet, and used to almost stutter because he was so quiet and that, right? And of course, they won't leave you alone, right? You know, you, "Oh, yeah, you just do chicken. Oh, yeah, you don't, you know, whatever." So they ended on this lunch hour having this boxing match where the sisters couldn't see them. And Gordon knocked Jimmy right out. And he was so afraid, not only what the sisters were going to say, but how much trouble he's going to get when he gets back home, right? You know, and he said, "Well, you can blame it on your father, because, I mean, he's the one who taught you how to box, and, you know, convinced that maybe it was a good thing, right? You know, but St. Ignatius was such an important part of people's lives, and, you know, and so on, and the it was so devastating when the Loyola Hall burned. That was a really big fire, you know, that they took. Gordon went out at midnight or something. He wasn't home till like late the next night, and that's when the auxiliary would set in and go down and make sandwiches to make sure that the guys were kept fed at least, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, but I mean, there was so much of a loss in that whole building because there was a bowling alley and there was this, I think it was an IGA store, it was a grocery store, and there was a 5 and 10 cent store, and there was a post office, and there was a little separate building which was a shoemaker shop. But they worked really, really hard to protect the church because it was so close. The glebe burned where the priest lived, but they did manage to save the church and that, right? You know, which was, I mean, no loss of life in that, right? You know, but it was you know, tragic to Bedford to lose a building of that size. And being at Scott Manor House and realizing through the years the amount of hotels that we had in Bedford and so on, and all built of wood with no fire department at that time and that, right? And it just, the fire starts and it's gone because there's nothing you can do to protect yourself against it, right? So the fire department was a big part of our lives and you know, provided us with some social life, and, you know, but it took Gordon away from me a lot, which was still okay. But we had a friend come to visit one day, and a fellow fireman, and you know, we lived on a hill. So if you park on the side of the road, you make sure your wheels turned in, right, you know, whatever. And the fire call came in. And Gordon and Kenny raced out to the car, got in the car, and forgot the wheels were turning. They started the car right up over the curb, right up over the lawn. I guess it's a good thing turning the wheels in, but you have to remember that. Mm-hmm. You know, it can't be that much of a rush, but the people who lived across from the fire station used to have names for the guys when they would, you know, they would watch them coming in, and they'd say, "Oh," and they only called Gordon Spider Legs because he was tall and that, right, you know, and you know, so it must have been funny for them watching these cars all coming all in to, you know, to get to fire trucks and that, right? I'm not sure what else you want me to say. I think Meadowbrook Drive was when we first built our home there. There were no houses on the other side of the street at all. Mm-hmm. There was a later on, they actually down on the flat part of over the first hill in the flat part. There was a man-made water hole there that the fire department had made, dammed it off for their purpose of water, and that mm-hmm. was a wonderful place for our kids to skate, because mm-hmm. if they ever fell through the ice, they wouldn't fall very far because it wasn't that deep in there, mm-hmm. right? You know, and it was really sad when they decided to drain the water off and let it go, and then built homes on it, right? And I understand that one of the houses suffered a bit, you know, it cracked in probably from the fact that the, you know, all the years the water sat underneath it, and it probably put a lot of gravel in to make it really strong enough mm-hmm. to hold a house on, right? You know, so let me see, what else did I put down here? Do you just want me to just keep talking?
Yeah, you're doing great.
Yeah. I played ringette with some of the women. I mean, I loved sports mm-hmm. when I was younger, and I guess the volleyball team was my savior in that. You know, so I had a good friend, Anne. I'm sure you've met Anne through the Scott Manor House and that. And she was playing too, right? You know, mm-hmm. and all the time when Gordon would go to play hockey, we'd all go. When my daughter Cheryl played ringette, and we'd all go to the games. And my son played hockey, and we'd all go to the games. I'm playing ringette. Nobody wants to come to my games.
Oh.
You said, "When I go, all you're no. Well, I got to do this. I got to do that. I get the oh yeah, right? You know, so anyway." Cheryl played, and it was a good sport. Mm-hmm. It was you know, and my friend Ann and I, we would go sometimes canoeing, and sometimes we would go cross country skiing, and you know, whatever. It was always lots to do, mm-hmm. you know, to within Bedford itself. You didn't really have to go very far out of Bedford, you know. It's always a great place to walk, because wherever you walked, you know, there was always people you knew, sights to see, you know, like we in the old bowling alley used to be up where, in the area where Pete Luckett has his, you know, that whole area, and the Dominion store was all there. I one of the things that I still have a hard job believing is in 1939, when they widened the highway in Bedford, across from Bedford Central School, there's a parking area where cars sometimes park along there, right, you know. Mm-hmm. But between, I think it's Division and another street there was on that side of the road a Canfield store, there was a telephone office, there was a cafe, there was a barber shop, there was a church, there was an ice cream store, and that, which all either had to be destroyed or moved. And so when I come by there, I still look at that and say, how did they fit all that in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about how narrow that road probably was, and how much smaller and fewer cars that would have been there, right, you know, but it still makes you look at it and say, wow, it must have been something. It's a good job they've got pictures.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't take pictures, what would we do? Because you sort of... One of the things that I've asked a few people recently is, how old do you think you were when you have your first memory? How far back can we remember in that, right? You know, and it's amazing when you think back of how many things that we can remember, you know. And I got into doing some acting, and I did a commercial, and you know, for TV and so on, and then. And then we did some live theater as well, and I'm trying to learn my lines, and you know, and I've got them on paper, taped all across my living room, so that in my head I'm going through them all, and going through them, and don't look if you don't really have to in that, right? But one of the young, I mean, this was, he was doing this project with seniors and young people, So while I'm trying to learn my lines, studying really hard, right? It's good for your brain, right? As we get older, because we say, like, keep the brain alive. This 11-year-old girl was helping me read my lines. And so the guy who's taking care of it all, and he said, yeah, well, you know, I mean, they can remember things. Maybe because at that age, their brains are empty. He said, well, I guess they are. You stop and think of how many... In 78 years, how many things can you keep in your brain, right? And my brain was usually focused more on music. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember what happened yesterday, but I can remember the words to so many songs because, and I still, you know, when my husband was living, we had a little music group and we just traveled around and played music and then after. Took a year to get my music back, and then met up with other people and played more music and so on, right? You know, so I go to a lot of the seniors' homes, and I'm singing with a little group now. We're just called Chicks and Dudes, and we just go to sing for the seniors, just because one of these days I'm going to be one of the people in there, and I hope people are going to come and sing for me too, right? Mm-hmm. Because as you say, when I look around at all those people and I say, like, which one of those is going to be me one of these days, right? And the person that's over there singing along and dancing along, that'll be me. Because I figure I'm probably an ADHD adult, right? You know, and it doesn't bother me to, you know, just think about that, right? I spend a lot of time at libraries, mm-hmm. you know, more in Sackville now, of course, because I live there. I get a lot of books, I get a lot of old movies and stuff, but when we lived on Meadowbrook Drive, I remember it wasn't so easy for me to get to the library. You know, I didn't always have access to a car, but we used to have the bookmobile. Wasn't that wonderful when that bookmobile, to me, that was more exciting than the ice cream truck. If the ice cream truck came, you had to hunt around, make sure you had some money for get the kids an ice cream, but the bookmobile didn't require that, right? You just had to make sure that you knew the day was coming and have your books ready to pass back in and whatever, right? You know, let me see. When we lived on Meadowbrook Drive, there were seven of us women, I think, we used to get together once a month and play cards and play Romoli. Wasn't that fun, you know, to be together with these people and have so many laughs and so on? And our house was noted for house parties because we played music, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't always play guitar. I learned only so that I could, you know, learn new songs. I would listen to them on the radio, and I would take them down in shorthand, and I would type them up, and then Gordon wouldn't necessarily know how it went, so I had to take my guitar and my guitar book out and just playing, playing, playing to find the chords, right, you know, and so on. So now I was to say, well, you know, do you play guitar? And if somebody says no, then I say, well, I play really good then, right? But I would say I would never make it to Nashville, but I think I can keep a sing song going all night, right? You know. So I guess that's, you know, and Gordon loved people around, right? You know, so he'd be out the door, come on in, right? You know. anyway, when we decided we'd sell our house, Gordon had a bad back and all the jobs were falling down to me, and he was feeling really bad about that, right? You know, and when we sold our house, his mother was still living. Couldn't believe that you would sell the homestead. She was still in her house that she lived in, you know, most of her married life, and that, right? You know, yeah, but it doesn't bother me, right? You know, it doesn't. It's okay with us. You know, we don't care about that, right? You know, and the first time after we sold it, we put our for sale sign up on a Thursday, and Saturday it was sold because it was on a hill, but we had a level, pretty level piece of property in it, right? And then the first, this was in June, and then the first, you know, at Christmas, we had neighbors always had an open house on Christmas, Boxing Day. So the first time we went up the hill after we sold the house, and my heart was in my throat. How am I going to feel when we pass the house, right, you know, and so on, and come around that corner and say, oh man, we had to fix that. Oh, thank goodness we don't have to do that anymore. It was just such a relief, right? You know, but I had an opportunity to go through it maybe 2 years ago when I was visiting a neighbor who was ill, and I just went over and reintroduced myself to the people there and said, oh, come on in, right? But there were enough changes in it that it didn't look quite the same, right? You know, mm-hmm. But when our son got married, he built rooms in our basement, and they lived there until all three children were born. So, I had access to those three children, right? You know, until the youngest one was 18 months old when they left, I think. But we took so much advantage of the Meadowbrook mm-hmm. playground area,
mm-hmm.
and would take them over there and all the time, I got to the point that when we would start to walk over, it would take a Sobeys bag with me or something, right? You know, because you just say, point out to them litter bugs. We just have to clean up after litter bugs, you know, because people really shouldn't be, you know. And I had a little garden in our backyard, and I had compost heap before they had green bins, right? You know, and so I would sort through, this is where everything went, and then it went to there, and then it went to the garden. So I would say to the children, see that lovely earth? That's what happens when you put your banana peel in where it's supposed to be, right? You know,
so yeah.
We've tried to teach them, the importance of that type of thing. And my husband was always a smoker, you know, and probably that's probably led to his cancer and in the long run, even though he had given it up 5 years. And so I made a deal with my five grandchildren that if you get to age of 18 and you're not smoking, I'll give you $100.
Okay.
So all five of them got their $100.
Oh.
And with the idea that if you start after you're 18, you're going to get back to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it encouraged them maybe not to be a smoker. I don't know whether it would or not. I would like to think that it might lengthen their life more than it did for Gordon, you know,
mm-hmm.
for him too. He was only 67, and life changes all around after you lose your partner, kind of thing, right? You know, but... don't know. Life was good. Life was good. Life is good again, you know, now that I've found a place in the world and got music back and so
mm-hmm.
on, right? You know, and the longer I live by myself, the more independent I become. I did meet someone through the grief support group, but it didn't really last because it's so hard to not be comparing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I finally just had to say to him, this is not going to work because I'm too busy for you. Because my kids never know where I was at half the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I put a lot of miles on my car, you know, because I make a lot of trips to Moncton where my sister and my late brother lived, and trips to PEI because that was where my mother's home was, and I still go over. I'm going next month to dog sit for my niece,
oh.
who has three Airedale dogs and a cat who thinks he's a dog. I'm coming to Bedford this week to dog sit for people that, you know, I just, someone through the, I played bass with their choir at St. John Vianney Church for a while, and one of the couples was going away, and she just kind of kidded and said, You wouldn't come sit with our cat while we're gone, would you? No, I wouldn't mind doing that at all. I just went down to the house, and it was close enough to home. I could go back home and check our dog in the day,
mm-hmm.
and you know, whatever. And then through them, somebody else said, well, would you keep a dog? And yeah, well, I went and babysat for a dog sat the first time and so on. So it's kind of developed into something that I didn't set out to plan, you know, whatever, and say, well, how much do you charge? I have no idea. Whatever it's worth it to you, you know, and whatever. So it was just another thing to keep me busy, you know,
mm-hmm.
because I like to be busy. I do a lot of jigsaw puzzles home. I read a lot. I did do some writing after my husband died. I think writing helped me a lot because I had I had three things on the go, and one was I kept up writing on Our Life with Cancer before, during, after. Then I had a daily journal. I kept things, and I had another one which was called Morning Papers. Every morning, I got up and I would write three pages. And you could be planning your day. You could be, some days I was in tears and some days I was just planning my day, you know. And then I had an ongoing letter that I would write to Gordon when I couldn't talk to anybody else and that, right, you know. So, and I wrote some poetry, and then I put some music to some of the poetry. And, you know, like the first one I wrote was Finding My Way Back to Me. Because I didn't really know where I belonged at that time, right, you know. So I think keeping busy is a really important thing, and getting involved with Scott Manor House has been wonderful. This has been the busiest summer because of all the activities that we had and that, right, you know, and I look forward to it. And I just think that of the amount of people that I've met since Gordon has gone, and I think that I've grown a lot since. You know, you just think you're never too old to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're never too old to learn. You just learn from people all the time, and you know, the different directions you can go, and it's just they. We had a first place I got my music back was a little group that we played through the Knights of Columbus Hall on the Cobbegood Road, and I was so hesitant to go, and I thought, I'll take my guitar and I'll go, and I don't know if it'll work out or whatever, and it did. And so one night, all the group from the Bridgewater area, which was the group that we played music with mostly, they were coming up to here, and I said, well, why don't you come to the jam, right, you know, on Saturday night? And so I'm standing there playing my bass, and I'm looking out. All of the people on this side are all people who knew Gordon, and all the people on this side are people I've met since, right, you know, and you just keep meeting people, and you say, there's just so many nice people out there that you don't have to put up with people who aren't. That my, you know, for my health, I say I avoid negative people at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not good for your health to listen to people, you know. I mean, I spent this past Saturday night in a situation that I thought, oh, I couldn't wait to get out. As a child, we had a picture in our house that was always there, and it was just a, you know, like the entrance into a house, and then beyond the first entrance was another room. And in the other room at the back, there's a whole lot of kids, and they're all having a party, and they're all having a good time, right? And this one little boy is standing out in this other room. He's underneath it says, I wish I was to home and this party was to hell. And I think so many times, can you ever remember yourself being in a position where you were somebody somewhere that if you could just whoosh, without having to say, I have to go, why are you going? Because I have to go, you know, it just, you know, and it was, you know, so many times when I get to that point that I think like, yeah. Being by yourself's not so bad sometimes. You know, you gotta like your own company when because you don't have to worry about other people and are you going to say the right thing and you know whatever. And I remember as a teenager thinking at one point, what if there's people who don't like me? What would I do if there are people who don't like me? You know, because I grew up the second youngest of a family of eight, and I was the good little girl. I followed all the rules. I did everything I was supposed to, because if I didn't, maybe my mother won't love me. I had a sister here, and I had a sister here, broke all the rules and did everything they ever wanted to do. And I'm, you know, and they used to call me, oh, yeah, little Miss Goody Two-Shoes. She wouldn't do anything wrong, right, you know? But it's hard growing up that way because we were never allowed to speak back. We were never allowed to defend ourselves. And that stays with you, right? You know, when you go out in the big world and it's like you're protected from everything and then all of a sudden you've got to face the whole world. And I came from, you know, and I met up with Gordon, who came from a family where they all expressed their opinions. They fought and, you know, yelled and then sat down, had tea like nothing happened. And, you know, in our house, if something went wrong, my mother got quiet. And then we all had to say, who did what now? Because we didn't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to grow up that way, right? You know? But I guess that maybe that I've grown more probably since Gordon's died because there's nobody to take care of me except me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have to say, like, okay, you better smarten up and get here. So, other than what else is
there? That's wonderful.